Welcome back to another episode of the Brandable Insider Podcast. My name is Keith Bohr, and today we have another special guest. His name is Jason Shepherd, and he's a very successful domain name investor, a marketing consultant, a nightclub DJ from Greensboro, North Carolina. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Keith. Great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you on. It's been a while. You're another one of these guys. You know, I had Barman on recently, and you and he are two guys that I've wanted to have on the show for a long time, but it always seemed you were always on some other show. You know, you always had a big sale and you're always getting interviewed. And every time there'd be like a long gap where you wouldn't have any exposure, all of a sudden, you know, Alvin over at, you know, Commerce, Kickstart Commerce would have you on or, you know, whatever. So I saw my spot this week, and I'm glad I was able to grab you and find some time.
Well, I'm glad to be here. And it's funny you mentioned the podcast with Barr, because I was listening to that this morning on my walk.
Oh, cool.
great stuff. I remember listening to it, and I literally said to myself, I need to write that down. I'm going to, because there was a few really good nuggets in there from both of you. So good stuff.
Great. Yeah, that's the great thing about having guys like you and Barman and others, Braden Pollock and so forth on the show, is that, you know, we just talk, we chat, we're just normal guys with a strange profession. And through these casual conversations, yeah, things drop out that, you know, I've learned so much stuff from interviewing people on my podcast, things that I've never tried or never thought of, never heard of. They just sort of drop out like little breadcrumbs along the way.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, tell us, well, first of all, I want to go back to your introduction. Two of the things, I got the introduction for this podcast, your introduction, from your LinkedIn page.
Okay.
And it doesn't mention two of your most outstanding activities in my mind. One is poker player, and the other one is Bitcoin miner.
Well, yeah, those don't go well on LinkedIn, you know. LinkedIn. Some people might consider one or either of those to be a negative. So, I was, and I'm not actively mining now, although I do have a Handshake miner sitting in Greensboro waiting to be turned on when I get back. It arrived after, I'm on a trip right now, and some people may know that, but so I'm actually on the West Coast. On a road trip. And so I've got a miner sitting back in Greensboro waiting for me to get back and turn it on. And I'm probably losing money every day that it's not turned on. But I started mining Bitcoin when Bitcoin could be mined profitably on GPUs, video cards, which is very early. And ASICs were just coming out. And as anybody in the space knows, it's basically an arms race within the ASIC community for getting profitable Bitcoin miners. So I've been out of the mining, you know, active mining for a while, but Handshake, you know, I feel is going to go up. And so if you can mine a coin that is going to be trending up, then you kind of have a hedge against the arms race, because, you know, by the time I get mining this and I've had it a couple months, I'm sure that it will be something coming out more powerful, which will make mine, you know, less, you know, the one that I've got a little less profitable, because the mining difficulty will increase with the increased hash power on the network. But, you know, it just seemed like a good spot to jump back in, because it's been probably 4 years since I actually had a miner.
Cool. Well, that sounds exciting. Get back down there in the mines. So yeah. You have quite a varied background. I mean, you know, nightclub DJ, marketing, domains, Bitcoin miner. A lot of what you do, though, is in the tech area. And so what's your background in tech? Do you have an education in technology, or are you just self-taught, or what?
I'm very self-taught. I have a degree in radio, television, and motion pictures from the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. You know, other than maybe some slight tie-in in that regard with DJing, I haven't done anything specifically related to the field, really, in my adult life. I was a retail manager. I was a private investigator. I was an IT architect, and then for IBM. And then I went into, you know, DJing has been a love of mine since I was a kid. I used to put a record on and needle drop up and talk in between, like I was on the radio. I DJed some of the coolest parties in high school, and then and really took off in college. I was working probably every Friday and Saturday night, and a lot of Thursdays doing, you know, fraternity and dorm parties. So when I got laid off from IBM in 2005, and an opportunity came up to DJ a bunch, and you know, I basically took it. And it was, you know, could I have gone back into a tech field, you know, as in working for a big company and possibly, you know, had a different life path? Sure. But man, I got to do something that I absolutely love for a number of years. And it was a blast. And then to stumble upon domaining and it be something that I could do side by side with that for a while was awesome. Now I have officially retired from DJing at this point. You know, it just, the clubs that I was working in were closed for so long after the pandemic that I just got to a point where I felt like it was time to make a break. So when they opened back up, I was like, I appreciate the time I had with you, but I'm not going to be coming back. It was a tough decision.
Uh-huh. But will you still do, you know, special occasions or cameos or something?
I will from time to time, but I kind of make a distinction, and this is probably just a little bit of a hang up of mine. I tell people, you know, I still have some gear, I still have my music library, but if I will play music, like I was supposed to play music for a benefit that got postponed, and I'm as long as my schedule works out, I will do it. It's a benefit for a friend of mine that's you know, got an illness. But I tell them I'm going to play music. I said, I'll play music, but I don't DJ anymore. So I don't really have my rig anymore. It won't be mixing, but you know, I can still use the skills that I've learned about reading the crowd and playing the music people like and do that, but it won't be mixed. It'll just be, you know, kind of sequential. I'll play a song and then I'll pick the next song based on what I see and what I know.
Okay. Cool.
So that's just how I keep it straight in my head. And I've told people the only thing I could really see myself doing would be maybe some playing music for some hardcore dancers, maybe at a ballroom or a dance hall or something like that. Because I really like to dance. Had a great time on this trip, stopping at some places that you know, have good country and Western dancing out here in the Southwest. As I've, you know, been on my journey, and so I could see myself doing that, but that's about the only thing I could see myself that would get me back into doing what I would consider to be DJing.
Yeah. And then somewhere along the line in this DJ career, you stumbled upon domains. How did that happen?
Well, I, you know, when you're DJing, you take like little side work because you don't have a lot to do during the week. And so I was helping a buddy out that was in the real estate industry, and we would get names for some of his projects. One of the things he liked to do would be like get the number and street.info to put on a header in front of the house that would take you straight to the listing. So if somebody rode by, all they had to remember was, you know, the street number and name.info, and they could get right to the information about the listing. And somehow in looking for names for him for other stuff, I stumbled across GoDaddy Auctions, and I was like, hey, what's this? I'd sold a few names in 2003 that I had purchased for personal use. They were horse related domains. I had horses at the time and had some grand plans in my head that never came to fruition. And somebody who now I suspect was a domain investor at the time, you know, they presented themselves as wanting them for their own project. I sold some domains profitably in 2003. And I wish that I had taken the hint and realized there was something to it. But it was only around 2016, 2017 that I started to have an awareness of domains as digital assets. And 2017 is really when I started buying domains as for investment purposes.
Okay. And I know that you, what I consider to be one of the outstanding graduates of the DN Academy course. And now you've gone on to be an instructor at DN Academy. In fact, you have a class, I think, later today or tomorrow morning. So when did that happen? Did you start out hand regging, kind of like everybody else does for a while, and then go to DN Academy, or did you just take the course right up front?
Well, as a lot of people, I know I've heard people on your podcast mention it, my start into the education of domain, you know, of the in the domain industry was via Domain Sherpa. And at that time, you know, Mike Seiger was the host and the owner. And eventually there was, I think I became aware of DN Academy through Domain Sherpa, and joined it. And then, you know, I went through the course, but I did it piecemeal and I jumped around and I stuck to topics that interested me. And there were a lot of gaps in my completion of it. And then Mike did the initial DN Academy Accelerator last year, and he opened it up to like 99 students. It was, and we, you know, he filled up really quickly, and that was pretty hardcore because he was offering it just to DN Academy members at that time. And if you missed a class or missed homework, he'd kick you out. And so I think 60 of us made it through. And I told Mike, I emailed him, I said, I'm a terrible student. I said, but I want to join. I've been a member for a while. And he's like, yeah, it's great to have you join up. And so that was a great experience. And I worked my way through all of the modules. I did my homework. I actually turned out to be a good student for once. And then I talked to Mike at Post Accelerator and said, hey, look, if you're ever considering doing any more of these, I would love to help out in any way I can. And a couple months passed by, and Mike said, hey, let's hop on a phone call. And we got together and talked it through and figured out that it was something we wanted to do, that, you know, kind of having two people and leading it, you know, we thought would be better, and turned out to be a really, really helpful. And we did the first paid accelerator we did in February. And we're wrapping up week 8. Final week tomorrow of the second one. And on the first one, Mike was the lead instructor, I was a co-instructor, and we kind of reversed roles this time, and I took over some of the more of the leading. Mike is still there, and still, I mean, nobody knows the material as good as Mike, and I have to rely on him, because, you know, even as many times as I've been through it, because literally I go through it every week with the classes that I teach, he just knows that material so well. And so this time I'm the lead and Mike's the co-instructor, and I'm doing a lot of the outside of the class duties, uploading videos and sending emails and whatnot. But it's been really great. And I'm very appreciative to Mike for showing the confidence in me to bring me on and have me teach his students.
Cool. So for the listeners, just to be clear, so they understand the terminology, the DN Academy course is an online course, and you pay a fee and you get access to the course and all the materials for a certain period of time. The lowest, I think, fee level is a year, I believe. And then you just take the course at your leisure, at your own pace. And there are lessons, and there's reading things to be read. There's videos to watch. And then at the end of each section, there's a quiz to make sure that you've, you know, absorbed and integrated the information. So that's the do-it-yourself standard DN Academy course. But there's also this option occasionally for the accelerator course, and please correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, where people can enroll in the accelerator and they can take the same course instead of taking it on their own at their own pace. They take it in a structured format with a group of people, and there's structured meetings, so many online Zoom meetings per week. And people are expected to keep up and do the homework and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And it's really, like, I got a lot of benefit out of going to the first one, and I've gotten a lot of benefit out of teaching the other two. And we do an open Q&A at the end. And so I think that's a big benefit to our students, because everybody learns at their own pace. Everybody understands things their own way. And just being able to ask Mike and myself, and maybe even other students might chime in on the answers if somebody has direct experience with something, is great. And the other thing too is the networking. I mean, we've had post-accelerator alumni Zoom calls with with both of the ones that have completed. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that with the with the current one. And like I've, you know, I've made good friends from the accelerator, people that I've stopped by to see on my trip. And you know, we've just learned from each other over the course of, you know, even though the accelerator was an 8-week period, you know, this has gone on for going on a year. And, you know, we've met most weeks for a year and shared information, shared successes, asked opinions about things. So really, the networking that comes out of the accelerator is probably as big a benefit as the structured, you know, taking of the course.
Cool. Well, that's a good insight. I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, at the end of each lesson, you get to ask questions about the lesson, but not just intellectually. You get the benefit of hearing the answers, which are informed answers based also upon experience, because, you know, you're a successful active domain investor. And so you can answer questions based on, you know, actual, you know, where the rubber meets the road experience. So that's definitely an added benefit.
Yeah. And Mike and I are really, really complement each other very well, because totally different investing philosophies. Mike has a small portfolio of high value names. I don't have high value names, but I don't have, you know, the level that he does. And so I have a large portfolio. And so, you know, you kind of get the ends of the spectrum, and both of us, you know, have kind of insights into the middle as well. And so we can kind of address any type of investing style with the two of us. And so it really is a benefit to the students. You know, they have questions about how to scale or what they should do and that kind of thing. And it's just great.
Cool. Well, speaking of which, that's a good segue into your domaining style and your portfolio. Can you give us some insights into how you've developed your domain investing style and your portfolio size, you know, over the past 3-4 years that you've been doing this?
Sure. I you know, in the beginning, it was really haphazard. But as I worked through the course, I started making sales and seeing what sold. I kind of refined my process, and as a lot of investors at kind of the you know, the early stages, I've started focusing on two-word.coms. And that at this point makes up the bulk of my portfolio. In fact, I'm significantly reducing my holdings in virtually all TLDs other than .com. I do maintain a fairly sizable .vc portfolio because I've had some success with that. And I got in a little bit early and have some really good SLDs there, but you know, I used to see .orgs and like them, and sold a few, but, you know, percentage wise, they don't sell like the .coms. Same with .net. I am bullish on .io though. I think that if you can pick and choose your spots, the wholesale prices are a little high right now for the premium .io. But I think that, you know, there are still some diamonds in the rough to be found in that space. So I'm cautiously adding .ios. I'm not actively adding .vcs, but I'm probably not going to be shrinking the portfolio there. But my goal is to be like 93% .com, because I just feel like, and those are the most investable. I don't think that a new G or a .net or a .org is unusable for an end user, but from an investable standpoint, of just having the sell-through rate that I need, you know, because every name has a discrete sell-through rate. It's just, we don't know what it is. But when you put together a bunch of names, you can start to have some predictability to it. And so my portfolio has grown to the point right now where I have about 6,700 names. So there's a predictability there. I know that I'm going to sell between 1-2% per year. The better my portfolio is, the higher that number is going to rise, which is why I'm, you know, getting rid of a lot of the extraneous .nets and .orgs that I really had no business buying, but that I know better now. So, you know, there are guys and people in the space that have bigger portfolios, even in individuals, not just companies, but I do have a high volume, you know, large portfolio strategy, I think.
Great. And my next question, the next thing I want to ask you about is how you acquire these mainly two keyword.com domain names that are the majority of your portfolio. But instead of just answering that sort of in a general way, I did pick out, if this is okay with you, I went to your Brand Bucket portfolio and I picked out five or six domains from just the first page I came upon.
Okay.
Some of your more recent listings. And I thought I'd go through and just ask you about them and, you know, get your thinking about, you know, why did you buy this domain and where did you get it from and for how much, if you know off the top of your head. And that might be, you know, informative for the listeners. So,
okay. Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, cool, man. So the first one I picked out is Teen Destiny. And now this is not it's not a tech name. It's not a kind of a two-word brandable that probably everybody listening to the podcast would automatically say, yeah, that's a great pickup. So tell us, give us your insights into that. It's listed for $34.75 on Brand Bucket.
Okay. So that name would have been, let me double check. So that would have been something that I bought on Dropcatch, and it would have been a back order and probably a discount back order. Yeah. So, what made me buy that? More than likely, let me see when it was purchased. Okay. So that was purchased earlier this year. So I would have gone through to expireddomains.net. I would have searched for twoword.coms. I typically filter at 12 letters. Now this is probably over 12. It certainly is over 12. And then I look from 12 to 16.
Okay.
And I do that break because I want to look at the 12 and under, in one pass. And then I want to know that I'm dealing with names that are a little bit longer and decide if I like them. And I just felt like that was I felt like that was something that I could sell. Potentially would be accepted at one of the brandable marketplaces, and if it wasn't, I felt like it would probably sell as a on the wholesale market, which is something that I do from time to time.
Great, yeah. Obviously, Brand Bucket liked it. They priced it at $34.75, or maybe you have it pushed up 20%. I don't know, but still, it's got a decent valuation at Brand Bucket. So your thinking was spot on there. Next one up is Alien Acres. And I put these in the chat for you, Jason, so you can have a little advance notice what I'm going to talk about. So Alien Acres. Yeah, I picked out ones specifically that are, you know, a little bit offbeat. So
yeah.
Tell us about this one.
So like when you have a volume strategy, I look, there's a couple things. So I put in for a lot of back orders, but you only get a percentage of them. And so at the time, I was using the GoDaddy bulk tool, which has been sunsetted now. So I don't know if Alien Acres would make the cut now. But when I had the GoDaddy bulk appraisal tool information, one of the things they give you is a percentage predicted sell through percentage at 500 and at the GoDaddy value. And so sometimes I would sort by that, and sometimes I would be in a rush and would just, you know, put in a batch of names, because if I put in a bunch of discount back orders, discount club back orders at Dropcatch, I know I'm only going to get a percentage of them. And so sometimes I would play fast and loose. And then after the fact, I would go through what I have, what I own, and decide, is this something that I'm, you know, willing to find out if Brand Bucket likes? And Alien Acres, to me, that sounds like an event place, almost like a haunted house, but alien based or something. You know, these places pop up every October or early September, you know, September, October, and hundreds and thousands of people go through these, and I could just see it as being something. And so it made the cut.
Cool. Well, it's got alliteration, you know, as I'm sure you know, I just think it sounds cool. I actually really like this name, even though it's, you know, off the beaten path. And I could see it being used for, like, as you said, like a some sort of virtual reality, you know, game or club or site or event or meeting, or it could be, you know, a UFOs, you know, organization, or it could be, you know, there's people that sell. I was just reading on Hustle. Yeah, I guess it's Hustle. Mm-hmm. This daily news thing that I get in my email that people are selling, you know, square feet of land in Scotland, you know, by the square foot, a 1x1 plot. And, you know, there's pet rocks and moon rocks. And, you know, so you never know when someone's going to monetize something, claim to sell moon rocks or something. Or the other thing I thought of, you're going to love this, is, you know, people are buying real estate now in the metaverse.
Right.
And so I was thinking, you know, maybe this is could be used for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, this could be a metaverse subdivision for people that have extraterrestrial avatars.
Who knows?
I mean, we're talking about a world where people are paying $12,000 and more for pictures of apes. So anything at this point is possible.
Right. And I think, you know, for the listeners that, these kind of domains, you know, a domain like that, I wouldn't fill my portfolio with, you know, a whole 100, 500, 1,000 of those. But I definitely do, as I can see you do, buy domains that are kind of offbeat, kind of different, kind of they're a little risky, maybe they're just, you know, they're not mainstream because you want to diversify, because you want to have all the bases covered, because you want to have variety in your portfolio, right?
Right, exactly. And you know, when you look at a single name, any single name, you know, sometimes it's hard to imagine what exactly I was thinking when I bought it, but you know, but then, you know, I a lot of times I just like the look and the sound. And I mean, this one to me has a cool sound, you know, Alien Acres. I mean, it just, it kind of flows. And so sometimes that'll be enough for me to, you know, put a back order in. And
yeah,
you know, and sometimes you just have to kind of dodge what, you know, what other people are going to be getting. Cause you know, I felt pretty confident putting that one in that it was going to be uncontested.
Right. There you go. And the next one on my list, that you've got at Brand Bucket is Trovoto. That's at $3,450. And, that reminds me of, it's got part of the word travel. It reminds me of, Trivago, the company Trivago. So I like this one as well. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I can tell you that this one was purchased because I was aware of the fact that Brand Bucket had approved it. So
In the past. Yeah, I see.
So I don't know that they make the same claim for new listings as they have in the past, but the in general, if it is was listed at some point in the past and either sold or the investor dropped it, Brand Bucket will then relist it. You just have to send them an email with proof of ownership and they'll move it right into your account. And so without getting into too many specifics, because there's a limited number of these out there, I do look for these specifically. And this is one that I had found that I liked. I don't buy every single one of them because some of them just kind of don't suit me, but I like the ones where it's, you know, that's got that flow alternation between vowels. I guess that's a seven. I guess it's a 7L, but with the TR at the beginning, it sounds kind of like a 6L. It just had a good sound and I knew it was approved, and I picked it up on closeouts for $11. So,
nice.
You know, it's hard to go wrong with that. And you know, especially when you can get something for, you know, with GoDaddy, you have to pay the renewal plus the $11. So that was $20. It's listed at Brand Bucket for $34.50. So you know, the math works for me. I like to pay between 1% and 3% for my brandable names, and so so it worked.
Okay. So 1% and 3%, that means if you're paying 1%, you're looking for a 100x markup.
Right.
Something between 30 and 100x markup.
Right. So like this name, like I probably would, like I didn't like, so if I got it at closeout at 11, I could have got it at 50. I could have got it at 40. I could have got it at 30. I wouldn't have bought it for 30 because 30 would have been $38. And that would have kind of thrown it up, thrown the math off for me. Especially, considering, you know, you can find these fairly regularly. If I knew that the listing price, and you don't always know, but there are ways that you can sometimes figure out what the listing price had been. If this had been listed at $10,000, then I absolutely would have paid the 50, you know,
right?
Because I know Brand Bucket likes it enough for it to have a $10,000 price. Then I'm willing, you know, I'm going to be willing to pay the 58 something that it's going to cost me to get it first at closeout.
Right. But if Brand Bucket had it previously listed at $15.95, you probably would have passed, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, if it was something when it's listed for a low price on Brand Bucket, but I know it's previously approved. If I like it, I might let it go to $5 on the closeouts. And if it's still there at $5, then that's going to be like 13 something net. Maybe I'll do that. Because certainly what I've, in my experience, and I think we may go, if we have a chance, we're going to go through some sales and later, and this will kind of come out then. I have had what I consider to be some success with the previously approved names. They seem to have a good sell through rate. So, if I can get it cheap enough, maybe a lower price name I would do, but I don't typically target anything sub 2000.
Okay. And so I've come across a number of domainers who actively search for domains that are particularly coming through the closeouts and the auctions, GoDaddy auctions, that were previously listed on Brand Bucket and they were dropped for one reason or another. And sometimes people ask me, how can I find those domains? And I don't really have a system for that. So is there anything you can tell us without giving away your secret sauce?
Well, kind of no, but I will say that the information is out there if you are resourceful. I've had people ask me, because I mentioned this in the accelerators and with the classes that I teach, and they're always like, oh, where do you get that information? And I'm like, well, it took a lot of time. I even spent money on to enhance the information from somebody else that is in this space and has a, you know, I was able to pay them to augment what I had. And what they gave me was a lot of duplication, but it, you know, I got like maybe 40% more than I had before. And so, you know, I've got a list of, over 100,000, names that are either currently active or have been active on Brand Bucket. And this is .coms. And I just, you know, I check for them regularly. And I honestly, I check manually by pasting them into the, bulk search tool on expireddomains.net.
Okay.
But it is very time consuming, but, I've scaled my Brand Bucket portfolio from, when COVID hit, I literally had three names. So you figure March of 2020, I had three names on there and I've got 1500 now. So,
wow. Yeah. That's quite an expansion. All right. So there is a way to do it, but it involves a little, technical knowledge, which is why I don't know how to do it, because I'm not a big tech person. But it can be done and it's time consuming. And I think people just have to figure their own way or befriend someone who has successfully found out how to, you know, mine that resource and learn something directly from them. So, okay, good. I don't want to take up any more time on acquisitions at Brand Bucket. Let's shift over to your recent, sales.
Okay.
That you've sent me. And there's two lists. There's a long list and a short list because you have sort of two sides to your business. Do you want to tell the listeners, explain that a little bit?
Sure. I have maintained a personal portfolio of names that I own outright. I also manage a partnership portfolio that is with an investor, a fellow investor that has... is using me to get into the space. He doesn't really actively keep up with trends or follow auctions or anything. But he did want to, you know, diversify his holdings. He's a businessman who has a number of different types of businesses, who I have worked with in various capacities over the years. And he saw what I was doing and was like, "Hey, I'd like to, you know, kind of get into this somehow." And so we came to an arrangement where, you know, he would provide some funds and I would do some legwork, and we have just have an arrangement where I do all the management. And so, you know, we've had some good sales. We've got some really good names that he owns and that we own now in the partnership portfolio. And it's been a good arrangement all around. But I do like to delineate, because some of the names in that are a little better than maybe some of the names I have. And so typically I will try and let people know if a sale that I'm reporting is from the partnership portfolio or from my personal one.
Cool. Well, that's a great, I mean, it's just amazing how creative domain investors are and how many different ways people have found to make money in this space. And you're here illustrating just, you know, one more angle, one more niche, and that is taking on a partner, someone who doesn't know anything about domains, but has funds to invest, who's an investor, just not a mm-hmm. domain investor. And then you provide the expertise, and, you know, between the two of you, you're making it work. So let's look at some of these sales that you've had in the partnership portion of your business. First mm-hmm. one is premiumtrade.com, great domain name. And you sold that one for $38,395. Tell us about that sale.
Well, that one is actually a installment sale. Our first installment sale with Breadbucket, and it was a solid sale. I mean, we probably, I think, I don't have the number in front of me, but I think we paid around $2,000 for that. Just a couple really good, strong keywords that we liked. The good thing about my partner is he has been a businessman for a number of years and is really good at, you know, naming companies. You know, he's named a bunch of different entities, various companies. And so a lot of times when we purchased this one, it was one that I had presented to him as something that I thought had value, and he was able to, we consulted with each other and decided, you know, kind of how much to go, because it was a higher price name and, you know, certainly involved him a little bit on the acquisition of those. But, this was a great sale.
Yeah. Two very strong keywords, premium and trade. I just typed it in my browser. I don't see a website there, I don't think. So it's not being used yet. I'm always curious to see how domains are being used. I do see, though, that... No, I don't see that either. I was trying to look up, see how many extensions it's taken in, but it's not coming up. So anyway, let's go to the next sale. That was premiumtrade.com, sold on Breadbucket for $38,395. And the next one up is Super Canine, $39.95. Where was that sold?
Well, I mean, it was sold on Breadbucket, for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
The purchase of that, I mean, super is just one of those words that, you know, you can pair up with a lot of different words and make a really good brandable from. And yep. Canine, you know, while super dog would clearly be better, I think super canine, it's got a pretty good sound to it. So, you know, we were really pleased with that sale as well. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I looking at that, I suspect it was either a back order or, a lower priced, purchase. I don't think that was one that we paid up for.
Okay. And, premium trade, I just finally just got .db open on my browser. That's taken an 18 extensions. And do you remember where you acquired that one, Premium Trade?
Yeah, that would have been a Name Jeff almost, or something? Almost certainly a GoDaddy auction.
Oh, GoDaddy auction. You paid a couple thousand, you said.
Yeah, that's my recollection. So I think that's right. Pretty
yeah,
sure
that's fine. Accurate. And Super Canine is a good one. I love your analysis. Super is a fantastic starting keyword. And Super Dog, that would be a great brand. But this is a good one too.
Right.
And then the third sale here for your partnership portfolio is Clear Mobility, $11,495. Tell us about that sale.
Well, yeah, again, it's Brand Bucket, which is, I think the only ones that provided you were Brand Bucket sales.
Okay.
So Brand, that's going to be, so it's Brand Bucket Day on these. Well, I mean, your podcast is the Brandable Insider, right?
Right.
But Clear Mobility. So when you hear mobility, I think two things. It could possibly be something related to like senior mobility, like the ability for people to move around. And it can also kind of tie in with the mobile phones. So we weren't sure, but Clear felt like it was a good pairing for it. And obviously somebody agreed because they pulled the trigger on a 5-figure sale for it.
Yeah, nice. And I just typed it in. It forwards to the website Iteris, Iteris, which is a connected and automated vehicle safety solutions company. So maybe it's something with mobile technology. Yeah, it's obviously with cars. So it's some sort of maybe communication or safety solutions for cars on the move. So yeah, great name.
Interesting. I hadn't checked that up on it. So that's great.
When I heard Clear Mobility, I was thinking right away like cell phone or something like that, some sort of communications.
And that's my initial go-to on that as well. But, mobility, kind of also, kind of goes into the ability, kind of people to move like scooters or walkers or that kind of thing.
Right. And then the last one on your partnership list is the sleepharmony.com, $3,790.
Yeah. So my partner really likes sleep related names. And I thought this was a great one. I mean, who doesn't want harmonious sleep? You just want, and sleep is a really hot topic right now. You got those rings that track your sleep, Apple Watches track sleep. Your mattresses are, huge industry. There's a mattress company on every corner, and you can't watch a YouTube video or go to an online site without seeing an ad for mail order mattresses. So, we're really, really long on sleep names, and this was a pretty good sale, we thought. I'm looking at it. I'm sure that was a closeout or a low volume, low auction win. I don't think that was something that we paid a lot for. So,
okay. And next one up, this is on your personal wholly owned portfolio, all the rest of these sales. Mm-hmm. We've got Bramble Tree. Now that's a little bit different, $34.95. What was the inspiration for that?
Well, that was my first, brand bucket sale. And I like tree as the second keyword in a name because I think it gives you an open vessel. And bramble is, just like a briar and I think, or, thorny bush or something. And it just had a nice ring to me. I mean, that's like Bramble Tree is the quintessential Jason brandable name. It just, that's it. If I could have a dozen, or 100 variations of something like that, I'd be pleased. Cause it's just, it could be a number of things. It could be a nightclub. It could be a whiskey. It could be a tequila. It could be a, some kind of lifestyle brand. And
it'd be real estate.
Right. It just kind of evokes, it doesn't really take you any one direction, but it is kind of earthy and kind of, back to nature, has a natural feel to it. So I just loved it.
Cool. Bramble Tree. Yeah, I like it too. As I was saying, it could be, construction, community development or real estate or something like that. Could be I could see a realtor named Brander Tree. That's a cool name. And by the way, I just typed in Sleep Harmony, and that is, in fact, a sleep products company. They sell some sort of supplement that helps you sleep at night. So,
interesting. That's cool.
That one's developed. And then Bramble Tree, I don't see a website on it yet. The next one up is also developed, and this sale is holster.com. And the word holster, H-O-L-S-T-E-R, is, something that holds your gun, usually, or holds a tool of some sort. But the one that you sold is the word holster with a W at the front. So it's sort of a hybrid of the word hole and the word holster, right?
Yes, that's correct. And I don't, like, I don't recall the inspiration for buying this. You know, it, the submission of it to Brand Bucket was one of my early submissions. Basically, I went through my portfolio right after the pandemic hit and submitted a lot of names. And I just felt like at that point, I was still kind of getting my sea legs as far as what they liked and what I liked in brandables. You know, it had a pretty cool sound to it. So I submitted it and they liked it. And sure enough, somebody bought it. So,
yeah, and it looks like it was bought by Shopify, because on the website it says Shopify's Enterprise Wholesale Tool Set.
Well, then thanks, Keith, because now I feel like I undersold it.
Yeah. Tell Brand Bucket they should have priced it higher. Yeah. And I guess it's a wholesale tool. So they like the idea of, the word whole being sort of embedded in that brandable.
Okay.
So well, good job.
Yeah. I mean, I was happy with the sale at the time, and I'm not going to worry about, you know, who bought it. If I was willing to sell it then, I'm pleased that it went somewhere that it's being used.
Yeah. And you've already, that money's long gone. I mean, you received it, you've taken it, you bought other domains, you've reinvested it. So it's all good, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And next up is Search Metrics. This one sold for $4,675, and Metrics has an X at the end. Search Metrics.
Right. So I like the X at the end for brandability, for when the word would actually end in a CS. And I think that, you know, metrics related to search, my thought process was that it was going to be something, you know, related to internet search, but, you know, certainly there are other types of search. But yeah, that was a name that I really liked, and I was pleased to see it sell, you know, sell with Brand Bucket for what I consider to be a good price. And you touched earlier on the price of something that you looked at, whether or not it was marked up 20%. I'm happy to tell you and your listeners and that pretty much when I get Brand Bucket approvals, the very first thing I do is raise the price, the full 20%. And then I look at the list, and if it goes to like $15 over a round number, I'll back it down just under whatever it is. So I can't remember the break points, but if I were to raise something and it would be $4,015, I would back that down to $39.95. But if it wound up at like, $4,355, and that was the max 20% above the suggested, I would leave it, because it wasn't so close that I felt like the margin justified the drop. So,
right. Okay. So when they get approved, your habit is to just pump them up to 20%, but then you shave a little off so that it makes a reasonable looking number, not 21.15 or something like that, something real oddball.
Right. And that one, looking at that, I like 75 as for an ending. I know that 90, I know that there are people that would say that I'm leaving $20 on the table by not doing 46.95, but, I'm just really big on the way numbers look sometimes. And I thought sometimes I like the way a 75 looks at the end.
Yeah.
So that's probably one that I probably could have done that to. I doubt that was the fully maxed. I probably was like 5,015 or 5,125 or something.
Right.
Or maybe it was 4,815 or something. And I just rounded it down to that. But, there's no way to prove that, because every name is unique. It's not like we can price the same bar of soap, two different things in two different stores and observe a sell through rate difference. So it's probably superstition on my part, but I do like the way certain prices look, and we'll do it.
Yeah. I do the same thing. It was a great article on NameBio. It's still there on the NameBio blog. And Michael there, the founder, talks about the psychological effects of pricing. And his perspective is that if a price looks odd, you know, that when you have something at $39.95, it's so common that, I mean, if people don't have $4,000, then of course they're not going to buy it. But if they have $3,500 and they see it's $39.95, they're just going to grab it. Whereas if you have it at $4,000, you know, $63 or something, it registers in their brain as being odd. And then they start thinking. And when people are making an impulse purchase or any purchase, even if it's a well thought out purchase, you don't want them to be doing extra thinking about why is this price like this? You know, maybe I should ask. Maybe I need to send an email and find out. Maybe they're negotiable. You know, maybe I can make an offer. So he says just price things, you know, in a normal way that people are just going to, you know, not think about it and just press the bin and go, you know.
Yeah. I mean, pricing is a, you know, there's an art to it. And I'm not by any means saying that everybody should go out and change their prices to end in 75. I've read, you know, a fair amount about charm pricing is what it's called when you, when you try and price a certain way to achieve a certain end. And, you know, there are varying opinions on it. So my general rule of thumb is I like to use charm pricing for single person purchases, something that one person is going to make the decision for. And I like rounder numbers for things that are going to have to be discussed or purchased by committee. Because I think, you know, if people are going to have to discuss it, I don't want them having to say, you know, $46.75 all the time. I want them to be able to say, you know, $7,500 or
right.
You know, $25,000, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, in my portfolio and the pricing, if somebody goes and looks at bin pricing, it's not going to be perfect for all of that. A lot of times I like to combine both. I like to use charm pricing by keeping it under a really big number, but I like to, instead of doing like going down to the five in the single digits, I like round it down to 5,000. So like instead of 19,995, I would likely do 19,500 because I consider a $20,000 purchase is probably going to take some discussion between a couple people. Certainly there's people in this world that could pull the trigger on that on an impulse, but I think it's more than likely that even a solopreneur might discuss it with a confidant or a trusted advisor. And I think that I like the roundness of it, but at the same time, the charm part of keeping it under the next big threshold of 20,000.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. And that's the same point from Michael Sumner over at Name Bio is keep the prices charming.
There we go.
They shouldn't charming. Be abrasive or uncomfortable to think or say or write or communicate. They should be easy and, you know, normal sounding. Mm-hmm. So good thinking there. Next up on our sell list, I'm skipping over a few here. HelloLifestyle.com, $49.95 at Brand Bucket. Tell us about that one.
Well, you know, of all the words that you can put in front of, you know, the prepending words to make brandables, you know, there's a lot of people that do the hey, and I like hey a lot, but hello to me brings a different feel.
Yep.
And I think that, I think lifestyle, you know, has a lot of connotations. You know, lifestyle brands would be home brands, what kind of lifestyle you want to be living. And I just felt like, even though that's a pretty long word or a pretty long domain with a fair amount of syllables, and it probably even feels a little longer than it really is, it just had a nice ring to me. And so when Brand Bucket approved it for a price that I was able to change to around $5,000, I felt like that was a good spot for it to be. And obviously the fact that it sold kind of bore that out, that, you know, Brand Bucket was right about pricing and I was right about buying it. And so that was one of my favorite sales for sure.
Yeah. I really like that domain a lot. It's taken in 4 extensions, by the way. And, it does have a developed website on it. It's Luxury Giveaways. It's an Australian company, I think.
Interesting.
And on the cover, there's a, you know, a sports car, and then there's a lady on a boat relaxing in the sun, and then the Rolex watch and that kind of stuff. So it's sort of a luxury brand, luxury lifestyle brand. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think 5,000 is a really good, very reasonable retail price for that. That's a great domain name, personally. So good sale there. And next up is bitgrant.com, $3,295.
Yeah, so I thought that my thinking when I bought that was, and I got that in 2019, so it was, you know, it's purchased a while back. And I want it for basically 2250, you know, so it cost me about $30 after the renewal. I just felt like grants are kind of big business. I mean, you get college grants, you get research grants. There's tons of different ways that you can, you know, get grants and things you can get grants for. Artists get grants, you know, and that when you put the bit in front of it, I just feel like it turns it into a crypto name. And I felt like, you know, as an early crypto adopter, that there was room in crypto to have cryptocurrency grants. And I felt like Bit Grants was a good brand to do that on. I actually think that was probably priced a little bit low, but I'm not one to appeal a lot of names with Brand Bucket. You know, especially if it's something that I acquired for a price that what they, you know, that if they, their suggested price is a decent multiple. You know, if I'd paid $800 for BitGrant and I felt strongly that it was a, you know, an $8,000 name, I might have appealed it, but I paid $30 for it and they approved it at a multiple that would, you know, was basically 100x. So it's hard for me to argue on that one. I'd probably choose my battles and save the appeal for something that I paid up for.
Yeah, exactly. Good domain name. And I commend you on your forward thinking there with this idea of Bit Grants. No website so far, but yeah, that definitely could be a thing of the future. And be interesting to see what gets created on that domain name. Next one up is visualox.com, $2,635 on Brand Bucket.
Well, I can tell you that as we discussed earlier, this was a name that was pre-approved. I purchased it solely because I knew that you know, I could send an email to Brand Bucket and with proof of ownership, and they would move it into my account. And so I don't know specifically that you know what it would be used for. Even I'm not familiar with the OX as a you know, I mean, an ox is obviously an animal, and typically keyword animal names are good. I'm not sure that ox ranks up there with in the upper echelons of animal names to use right. In brands. But what I have found is that, and you know, algorithms change and things change, but the success I've had with the pre-approved names may come from them floating up a little higher in the ranking in the search rank. Or presentation on Brand Bucket. That was my thinking. And so I kind of doubled down on that. This was one of the ones that sold because it sold on back in April. And I can tell you that I did not have it for long. In fact, it was purchased on January 2nd. So I bought it on January 2nd and it sold in April. So
nice.
That if only all domains could sell so quickly
in 90 days. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, we've got two more domain sales here in your personal portfolio. Two more sales from 2021. And the first one is activefunnel.com. Sold that for $34.95.
Yeah, I love funnel names. One of my earliest biggest sales was not biggest now, but one of the early high four figure sales was funnelsecrets.com, and I've mentioned that on other podcasts. So I think that you know, people that are into funnels understand the importance of domains, and so it's a naturally good market. And, you know, I don't know, have a specific count, but I know that I have dozens of funnel names. And I have submitted a number of them. Not all of them are great fits. Not all of them get accepted at brandable marketplaces, but the better ones do. And I think that was a solid sale and a solid price. And there's, and I'll double check real quick, but I think that was probably a discount drop or a possibly a hand reg. Let me go back. Yeah, definitely a drop. Caught it drop catch. Yeah, it was a full price drop. I must have liked that one pretty well. But when I saw it coming through the drops, I was willing to put in a full price for it. But
so that was $59, you mean, on drop catch?
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. Active funnel. Now the word funnel. I've heard of sales funnels. You know, that's a marketing term, I believe. Mm-hmm. But how else is funnel used in tech or in marketing or whatever?
Well, the sales funnel was really the method, the thing I was thinking of. And I haven't checked the site. And if you have, and it turns out to be something having to do with putting oil in the engine of your car, I'm going to feel silly. But
no, I just wanted to ask because I've always thought funnel was kind of a funny word to have in a brandable. There are several of them, a bunch of them probably on Brand Bucket. And I own a few too, because I've just, you know, thought, well, if it's good enough for the goose, good enough for the gander. But I've never been totally sure how that term is used, you know, in the tech industry.
So, have you ever gone to buy a product online, and then as you're in the checkout, you're presented with other options?
Right.
Maybe upgrades, or maybe additional ones for no shipping, only a handling charge, something like that.
Right.
All of that is a sales funnel. So right. There are people that make just millions of dollars selling on the internet, and they use funnels for it. And there's any number of applications for sales funnels. I mean, it goes from lead capture to conversion, and that was just something I had an awareness of. There are gurus in the funnel industry, and that have lots of followers that are then, you know, trying to turn around and create funnels for other people, and they need a place to send them to look for them. So it's just a market that I felt like, was worthy of dabbling in, and I've had, you know, pretty good success with.
Great. And I also like this word active. I've noticed that startups tend to like words, keywords that are indicative of action. Like they like jump, they like hop, they like agile, they like mobile, mobility. Actually, sort of action words seem to be, in my observation, popular with startup companies. So active funnel, I think that's a great domain name. And the last one on the list is Caesars Gold, sold for $29.95.
Yes. And this was just a recent sale, my most recent one. And I just felt like, you know, it was a good brand. I mean, gold is hard to go wrong with. It's pretty good at the beginning or the end because it's a physical thing, but it's also a color. And this one just had a good sound to me. Now, certainly I could understand the argument that you would want to stay away from gambling with it, maybe, because obviously, Caesars is a big casino operator here in the United States.
Right.
I don't feel like their grasp of the trademark on Caesars is such that this was one that I shouldn't own. Depending on who bought it, that's really on them as to how they plan to use it. So,
yeah, it could be a coin company or gold. Old coin company or something like that.
Sure. Or some kind of product, you know.
Yeah.
It could be a suntan lotion.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Suntan lotion. All right. Well, that concludes our list. And we've been chatting now for the better part of an hour or so, Jason. I really appreciate your time. Before we go, are there any, you have any advice or words of wisdom for my listeners that are, you know, starting out in the industry? They've bought some names. They're still learning. Maybe they've had a couple of sales, but they want to jump things up to the next level. What wise words might you have for someone in that position?
Well, stick with it, but don't overdo it. Build on your successes and see what sells for you, or see what works for you. Because I've had good success with a particular TLD, and I've had not good success with others. And so sometimes you just don't get it on a certain thing. And if you realize that, like, you're not doing well with a particular niche or a particular TLD or a particular type of keyword, don't be afraid to adjust your thinking and liquidate those and move on. Always keep learning. Obviously, being a DN Academy instructor as you are, that, you know, I'm partial to them, but the information is out there for free as well. If it just takes you longer to get it, you could watch all of the Sherpas going back to forever and glean the information out of it. You'd have to filter out some of it that's not applicable now, which is one of the benefits of the DN Academy. But it's out there. Obviously, the DN Academy is the preferred method and the shortcut. But just keep learning and keep experimenting and double down on what works, and don't be afraid to walk away from what doesn't.
Great. Good advice. Stay light on your feet and learn from your mistakes and keep duplicating and amplifying the things that are working and that are successful for you.
You said that way better than I did.
I have the easy job. I just get to summarize what other people say, you know.
There we go.
Well, Jason, it's been a real pleasure. I'm glad that we finally got together and got you on the podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time to meet with us and share with us all your amazing experiences and knowledge and wisdom and everything. Really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, Keith. Thank you so much for having me on.